This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, wow. I am really thrilled today. I have a really great guest, and the book is quite amazing, and I get a lot of books. I get a lot of serial killer books and murder books and zombie books, but I think this is the most frightening book I've ever read. So I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Will Geddes. Did I pronounce that right, Will?
Absolutely perfectly, Patsy.
Oh, I love your accent. You know, I lived in England for a number of years. I bought a cottage, a 400-year-old cottage. And I lived in Sonning. And so I always get so thrilled when I have somebody from the UK. So, okay.
Well, bless you. Why did you leave us, Patsy? Why did you leave us? It can't have been the weather, obviously.
Well, actually, I did leave. It was after like 5 months of rain and cold. And I decided that we had to get out of there and go someplace warm. And we flew to Houston. And it was so hot and beautiful. 3 weeks later, I was packing up and we were moving. But, you know, the funny thing is, as I was saying at the beginning, I get so many books. And some of them are really frightening. I've been getting serial killer books and zombie books. And then I get this book and I thought, oh, my God, this is horrific. The name of the book is Parent Alert: How to Keep Your Kids Safe Online. And there are so many stories in here, and it's so many disturbing things that people just have to know.
It's quite worrying. And actually, to be honest, the response, Patsy, has been quite phenomenal. We only actually released the book at the end of last week, and we've already hit the bestseller category on three different Amazon already. And it's the response has been quite astounding, and it's amazing how many parents have actually come up to me and said, thank you, Will, we actually now have a go-to guide to go from.
It's so well done. It is told from three different perspectives, but the details, the information, everything is just, it's laid out so beautifully, and I was so impressed with it, and I am telling everyone that really anybody who knows a kid, well, actually, you know, even for every adult, this is stuff, there's so much in this book that I didn't know. And since we're all on the online today, you know, I think it's just as good for any adult out there to know what you've written here.
Thank you. And that's very sweet of you to say, Patsy. I mean, it was quite a process to go through. And I have to say, to a certain extent, I think one of the nicest comments that I've had back from some of the readers and some of the people who've bought the book already has been that it's been a reassurance for a lot of parents, not alone in dealing with some of the more terrifying incidents and risks which their children, and even, like you say, have got themselves caught up in. And I think the biggest challenge for many parents, it has been that when you put into something like Google cyber stalking or cyber bullying, for example, millions of results. And I think when often parents will go to Google or one of the search engines to try and find the answers, they're so overwhelmed with just the quantity of findings and search results, they don't know where to start. And some of those results are actually also contradicting each other. So what I've tried to do here, as you've seen, Patsy, is really pragmatic, sensible package that whether you are very tech savvy or you're not tech savvy in the slightest, we hope we've achieved that middle ground that any parent can go to and say, you know what, I may not have known anything, but I can be informed now.
Exactly. Because one of the things I love about this book, it's laid out with, I like books like this where there are boxes that have little side stories, because what happens is when you have a book laid out like this and with all the details and of what to do, how to address a problem, it's very readable and you can pick it up anywhere. And I'm sure people are going to be, you know, they pick it up and they might look at the chapters and they, the first thing they might see is looking at the index online shopping, and they're aware of online shopping and they want to know more about it, or cyberbullying, of course, which is just an unbelievable problem. So everything here is just really wonderful. And when you talk about, let's talk about the statistics. I knew that kids were on the computer too much. They're looking at the screens too much. You know, when we were kids, we didn't have, I think you're old enough that we didn't have them. And,
absolutely.
And, it's so funny. The only screen that we were interested in when I was a kid is the screen door. When my mother would yell, "Don't slam it on your way out." And then we ran free all summer. We had the most glorious summers. We didn't have any of this.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, this is, it is a massive shock, I think, for many parents. I mean, statistically, Patsy, children will spend on average 6 hours a day online. And in fact, most of the TV companies will actually state that children spend more time online on their devices than they do even watching TV. Whereas when in our childhood, we would, when we were allowed to, really just watching stuff on the TV. Other than that, we had to be outside playing or riding about on our bikes or doing whatever. You know, from the earliest ages, I mean, I've come across in the research for this, children of the age of 5 with social media accounts are terrifying that they've been equipped with these devices, which a lot of parents will simply go, look, here's a tablet, here's a computer, here's a phone. Play some games, look at Peppa Pig, look at the cartoons, and they don't realize that actually they're pushing their child out into pretty much unleashed waters, and they are going to come across some stuff which they really wouldn't want them to.
Oh, this happens all over the place. I was in a restaurant, and a woman had 3 children, and all 3 were on the tablets, and I was thinking, oh, well, that's terrible, because when we used to go with my mom, you know, she would talk to us like, okay, you know, it's just awful. I think it's awful. And as you said, there are so many, they have games, but then those games can lead to so many other things.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and one of the specifically put in there, Patsy, as you probably may have seen, and it is a big book. I think, you know, a lot of people, and certainly some of the amazing reviews we're getting from people so far, is it's almost so big that you kind of go to the chapters, like you say, that are the most concerning for you. And then you sort of step back and you almost have to read it again. But having said that, it's not overwhelming. Each is pretty conclusive, and it provides everything from best practice right through to what to do if it all goes horribly wrong, where to go, what to do, how to do it, who you should need to report it to if you need to, how to deal with the school if there's a problem, all sorts of things. But yeah, it's one of the chapters is about tech healthiness. And I think it's easy for us to forget that actually these devices, and even we as parents and as adults, can find that we're using our devices. And we ourselves have to kind of set a good example for our kids, because we can't tell them not to use a device if we're sat at the table and we're constantly flicking through social media or news feeds or whatever else there might be.
Now, one of the things that it's very worrying is that when a child is on the computer, they are really opening up the entire family's information to anyone who gets in there. And one of the things, of course, we know about phishing, because that's been a big problem here in the United States, even among adults.
Oh, well.
So tell us about phishing here in relationship to the children. What do they get?
Well, I mean, in terms of phishing, I mean, and we're all becoming much more sort of aware of that parlance. And there's actually phishing, there's vishing, and there's even smishing. And phishing will generally be the email that comes through that might look like it comes from your bank, or it could be from a federal department, or it could come from someone. Generally, they will try and wrap it up in something that looks kind of scary, like your account's being closed, or you're overdue in terms of payments, or it's overdrawn. And it will say you need to click on this link to go to your account to set the procedures right. And it will try and terrify you into responding to it. But then when we move into things like smishing and vishing, smishing is an SMS message which will come through. Quite commonly, I'll get them as well, where it will say something like your Apple account, your iTunes account is suspended, but click on this link. And on vishing, which is even more terrifying, is actually someone speaking to you down your phone who sounds like they're calling from your bank or from a federal department. And it's very easy for us to be coerced into clicking onto a link in a phishing or a smishing. Or if someone's vishing us and that's speaking to us by voice, asking us to tap in a particular URL, a web address on our computer, which then leads us to something which can then either install some kind of Trojan program or some malware or even ransomware that can lock our computer down and put us in a horrible, oh my goodness, I've got to pay a Bitcoin or whatever it might be to then decrypt my computer. And that's the thing you definitely don't want to do.
Well, not for children. When you have children on your computer, the same computer that you everybody in the family is using, what do you have to make sure? What are the best ways to block children from getting access to bad sites?
Okay, well, the first thing is, if you're sharing your device with a child, you want to ideally, if you can, and this is easier on a laptop than it is on a tablet and on a phone, is to create a guest account, create a brand new environment within which the child can then sandbox and then put on parental controls. Now, that can include creating a Gmail account, for example, specifically for the child that you have, A, the password to, but secondly, and one of the things I talk an awful lot about, and I've actually done an Instagram account, parent_alert, is to talk about two-factor authentication, which is one of the best yourself against someone accessing your account, logging into it, or hacking it without your permission. But you create that separate environment with those parental alerts with, say, a Gmail account, like the YouTube Kids channel, so that your child can be looking at protection, but the protected environments, but the parental alerts, which you can set in YouTube, make sure that they're not navigating out of that safe environment into other areas that you don't want them to see the content of.
Now, you say it's more difficult to protect the tablet.
Well, yes, in terms of setting up guest accounts, it can be a little bit more difficult in terms of setting up a guest account. But what you can do is put parental controls on there. But something people about in terms of protecting their own information and their own environment, if they're sharing it with a child, is quite often, and you may have this, Patsy, and I'm sure quite a few of your listeners do, will have autofill in their browser for things like Amazon and other online shopping retailers. And if you're lending your device to the child, you've got to bear in mind, you've got to protect requirements from the child being able to start ordering stuff online without your permission. So you need to set up the authentication or secondary passwords to make sure that they can't just order stuff. And I mean, I've had parents who've come to me and their kids have ordered loads of stuff, even things like the App Store you need to protect against. But one of the things that you have to also be cautious of, and I had this, was I had a parent who came to me with an iPad and said, my child has actually changed the access PIN to accessing the actual iPad itself. And she said, you know, can we try and get behind that? Can we hack it and break it so that we can get back into my iPad? And I said, you know what? The security is so good on iPads that it's virtually impossible to actually try and hack that actual PIN to access the iPad. So you've got to be cautious. You've got your personal emails, your work emails maybe on that device as well. So I talk about it in the book and how to set it up step by step. And it may sound complicated, but in the book, I go through it bit by bit to show you exactly how to set up that device nice and safely.
Yes, as I said, the chapters are divided into easy to understand subjects and follow through ideas so that people can really try to get a grip on it, because it's frightening out there. And one of the things I worry about with children is that they start chatting online. And is there such a thing as a safe chat room?
Well, to be honest, there is, but there, you know, underlying everything that we talk about, whether it be sexting, whether it be cyberbullying, whether it be cyber stalking, shopping online, there are three basic T's, as I call them, Patsy, which every parent needs to have in the back of their mind. The first one is T for trust, which is between you and the child, but also the child to you. And, you know, we can talk about things like spyware and the good and the bad of putting something like that on a child's device. But trust is absolutely imperative. You've got to make sure that the child trusts you, but you also are telling the child that you're bestowing trust on them. The second thing is fundamentally, and many parents that I've spoken to have neglected the fact that their child now inhabits almost as much, if not more so, an online world with online friends than they do with their real friends in the real world. And the parent has to, in the same way as if your child is going off to play with a couple of friends, you'd want to find out who these kids, where they met them, who their parents are, where they live. To a certain degree, you need to also transfer that over to their online world. Who are they talking to? Where are they from? Engage. And so talking to the child is important, but equally for the child, that if they come across something disturbing, or they see something, or they get into a communication with someone that makes them feel that they can feel they can come to you as a parent and talk to you about it, for you to hopefully educate, explain, and help them, which leads me to the last T, which is teamwork. And it's very important that the child feels, and I do this whole section, Patsy, as you've seen, about how and when and in what shape you can talk to your child about their online world, and especially if they get themselves into And it's really key that the child, and you as a parent, have to kind of keep yourself a little bit under control, that if, you know, your child has got themselves into a really difficult spot, that they don't feel if they come to you as a parent, you're going to confiscate their device and you're going to punish them straight away. You've almost got to keep yourself in check to go, you know what, there's plenty of time to punish you down the line, but for now, we've got to trying to resolve that problem that we've got. And chatting online, the statistics are just terrifying. I mean, 43% of children have spoken to a stranger online. And when you consider girls are 9 times more likely to be groomed online than boys, it is they can be talking to other children or other individuals and users pretending to be children in all sorts of environments.
Oh, as I said, this is a frightening book. I wanted to mention your co-authors, Nadia Swahalha, is that right? And Kay and Kay Adams.
Yeah.
And everyone, you know, I'm sure people have all seen you, Will. Will has been on every news program, always whenever there is a problem in the world of terrorism, and unfortunately we have a lot of that. Will is sure to be one of the, well, he, because Will is the, I think, one of the top experts in the entire world on terrorism and all of these problems. So we've all seen Will on television.
You're very kind, Patsy. Thank you.
And I love the voice. And once they see you on television, they will say, "Oh, that's Will." And I have his book because as I said in a little blog I wrote about your book, I said, everybody really needs to get this book because Will knows what he's talking about, and that's what we want. We want the real information, the information that is vital for us to understand and for us to use to protect ourselves, especially now with all of this, all of these devices that talk, that we can talk to in our homes. I think those are all frightening.
The smart tech thing is quite astounding, Patsy. You know, people are introducing Alexa, Echo, Dot, all these new sort of virtual assistants. And the one thing I want your listeners to almost do off the back of our chat today is to just have a bit of a as to how many devices they have in their home that has a microphone or has, for example, a camera in it. And that's everything from a phone to a tablet to a computer to a TV to a virtual assistant. And I think they'll be quite surprised as to how many devices are probably in their home that have that possible access.
And then I don't know why there are people in this world who want all this data on us, and they collect it and they sift through it, and who knows what they're going to do with it. So it is something we all have to be aware of. And you've done a brilliant job in this book. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And as a matter of fact, I would like to invite you back. I'm going to, in the next few months, I'm going to have several authors who have written novels about terrorism. But I would like you to sort of follow up, and we can talk about the real world of terrorism. How about that?
I'd be delighted, Patsy. That's my normal day job.
I know, I love your voice so much, I could talk to you all day. So,
bless you.
Okay, and so the book is called Parent Alert, How to Keep Your Kids Safe Online, and it's by Will Gatiss and two co-authors who did a great job of, they put in their own stories, mothers who look at it from a different perspective, and Will answers their questions, and he answers all of ours, and you've done just a terrific job, and I know it. Everybody out there really should get this and make sure that they protect themselves. That's what we have to do.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I so appreciate being invited on your show today.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Thanks for joining.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay. Wow. All the way from England. What a joy it is to talk to him, because this book frightens you, but it's something that you really need to know, because the stories in here, the individual stories of what some children have gotten into and what has happened to them because their parents did not protect them. And in the end, it's up to the parent to protect them and to make sure that they are really watching what's going on online, so that we don't have some of these tragic stories happening. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we get back, I've got somebody else from England today. So this is a very British day for me. I'm having lots of fun.
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper. I am back, and I am really having a wonderful, wonderful day. I'm talking to people from England today. So I'm so happy to welcome to the program Rosie Walsh. Hi, Rosie, are you there?
Hello, I am here.
Okay, well, I was just speaking to somebody in England, and now I get to speak to you, so I'm having a wonderful day.
Oh, I'm sure I probably know whoever it was. We all know each other.
Well, where are you at the moment?
So I'm in a city called Bristol in the southwest, about a couple of hours west of London.
I know it well. Oh. I when I was young, I was obsessed with Jane Austen. And as soon as I was 21, I had saved my money. I'm from Michigan's Northern Peninsula. And I don't know why, but somehow Jane Austen became an obsession. And when I was 21 years old, I bought a house. I bought a 400-year-old cottage in Sonning. Yes, not far from Henley. And so I had the wonderful joy of learning about dry rot and wet rot. And I'm
welcome to the UK.
That's exactly what the real estate guy said to me after I signed the papers.
I like that he told you after you'd signed.
Yes, well, but I had fun. It was fun. I renovated that place because they had covered the ceilings. They'd covered the beams with plastic tiles, you know.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I do know, and I've seen it many times, and I can only apologize on behalf of the British people that happened.
Oh, well, I had so much fun.
I
did a real job on that and brought it back to its glory. So that's why I love to talk to people from England, and I love to read books set in England. So, whoa, this book, the new book is called Ghosted. Well, it's your first American book, I suppose we'd say. Big American book. And when I say big American book, I mean, my goodness, this is going to be a bestseller all over the place.
Oh, well, I hope you're right. I'll take that. That's a pretty good start.
Yes. Well, you got some, like, you got some blurbs here. You know,
I know. Oh, I can't believe it.
Oh, I thought when I saw, you know, I never look at the book covers, and I never look at the information that the publicist sent me with books, because I always want to form my own opinion. And it was so funny. So I finished the book, and I go and I look at the blurbs, and I thought, oh my goodness. I mean, some of my favorite people say the most delightful things about you, and including Clara McIntosh, who says, a delight.
Yep.
And I love her. I think she's fantastic. And
yeah,
you know,
she's an extraordinary writer.
Really extraordinary. And then, of course, right there on the cover, Leanne Moriarty. Wow. When I started reading the book, and we have to tell people what ghosted means for those people who don't know. When I started reading, the name that came into my mind, because I always, you know, think of all the authors I've read. I was thinking Jojo Moyes. She's been on the program a couple of times. And so I'm reading this and I think, oh, Jojo Moyes. Oh, boy, we've got another best-selling author right here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Gosh, you should be working at Viking Books.
I should.
They should have you as a publicist.
I am a great publicist. I always come out with great ideas for people on how to promote their books. And Ghosted, I'm so happy that you changed the title from the English version.
Well, I have my agent, Alison Hunter, to thank for that.
Well,
when we sent it to her for submission, she was absolutely certain that The Man Who Didn't Call would not work.
Yes.
She said it was too much like a Hitchcock film, and she, you know, she's right.
Which is funny, but in other languages, it looks very good. I love your webpage where you have your books in all the different languages. Now, Ghosted doesn't translate as easily in other languages, but
this book has many names.
Exactly. But some of them are. I want to mention this website because it's really good, and I love that you put up all the different names. Just reading all the different names in all the different languages, Zes Perfecte Dagen. I thought, oh, I love this. I love this, and I love you as a as an author, because the minute I saw your pictures, your photos, you know, your publicity photos, I said, this girl is smart. This girl is clever. She knows how to promote a book and to promote herself, because that's what you have to do when you're an author.
Well, thank you, firstly. What lovely things to say. But I think for me what works is actually just being myself, because I just cannot take myself seriously. But I think actually readers over the years have just quite enjoyed that. I'm very, on my social media accounts and my website, I'm very honest about who I am. I don't purport to be some kind of brilliantly clever creative writing expert or anything of the sort. I'm just somebody, just this kind of lucky girl who, you know, who works with her gut instinct when she's writing. So any self-publicity that I do is is normally of the rough and ready variety. But I guess that works with people. People connect with, you know.
It does, because what I love about the photographs of you is that you are real. I mean, one looks at you and says, oh, well, she's looking. She's interesting. I want to read what she's writing, because I want to know what she's thinking. And so that's why, you know, when I read Ghosted and I thought, whoa, I'll let you tell what you want to know. You want people to know about it, because first of all, I assume all the women out there know what Ghosted is.
Well, I hope so. I mean, it's not a phrase I'd heard, actually, before my US agent suggested that we went out on submission under that title. But when I looked it up online, I discovered that it even has a dictionary entry. Shall I read it out?
Oh, yes.
Ghosting is the practice of ending a personal relationship with somebody by suddenly and without explanation withdrawing from all communication. Which I think sums it up pretty well.
Yes, nah. Well, we'll say. How can we think?
I think of it. It's an appalling thing to do to somebody.
I think it is. It's just in the
cowardly, so disrespectful.
So we have here. You came out with this idea after listening to somebody who was ghosted herself about some poor woman who you know is mightily in love, and then the guy disappears on her after a week. Boy, it's sort of shocking. We can't really tell too much about what goes on in the story, though, because we don't want people to know what's going to happen. It is a mystery, and there are so many parts of it. It's very complicated in many ways. There's lots of different characters, lots of different sort of storylines in it, all which blend so beautifully together. And later on, when I looked at the cover of the American edition, and I they have this tree with all these little dotty things. I'm not sure if they're lollipops or whatever, but I thought, that's exactly perfect, because it really, in a way, tells a story of your story. There's so many little bits and pieces, and then it all blends together. And I was thinking, boy, when she was writing this, she had a lot of things to keep in her head.
Yes, yes. There were times where I felt my head would just blow off or explode. It was, I mean, I think writing any novel, you know, you're holding so many strands together, you know, in one little brain. There are always times when you'll hit a wall. But actually, with this one, in spite of the many strands and energies of the book, it was just a really delightful experience writing it. In a way, you know, it's been unlike any other experience I've had. And I think partly that's because it was just a story that I was really meant to write. Partly because I had far longer to write it than I have had to write previous novels, and I think that really made a big difference, the writing. But partly because I went on a 5-week hike before I started writing, and I had a lot of time on that hike, because obviously all I was doing each day was walking about 10 miles up and down cliff paths. And I think that had just a profoundly energizing effect on me creatively. I think it really cleared my head and made me stop sweating the small stuff. And I think above all, just made me realize that I could do anything, because I believe that particular 300-mile hike is the equivalent to climbing Everest at least once, because of the number of meters that you ascend during those 300 miles. It was an incredibly tough hike at times. I thought it would kill me once or twice. But it didn't, and I came back just thinking, wow, I really can do anything. And so whenever I encounter plot problems, I just felt calm about it.
Yeah, if you can walk 300 miles, you can. Now, we'll just start the story off, and we'll tell this much about the story. Sarah meets Eddie. Eddie meets Sarah, and it's love at first sight. Now, I looked around, and you had a few people said, oh, well, you know, I don't believe in love at first sight. But since I am an absolute, absolute believer in love at first sight, because when I saw my husband, I was in love with him within 5 seconds. I mean, I saw him.
Oh, my gosh.
I saw him standing at the door of my office. I looked at him, and I was in love with him. And I knew that that was it. The only problem, and I'll tell you, I had this big problem. I was praying and crossing my fingers as he's walking into my office, and he was so gorgeous, and I fell in love with him. And all I was praying, please, 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 God, he can't smoke. He can't have ever smoked. And it turned out he was a pilot, and he had never smoked in his life.
Oh, and I thought that was your deal breaker, though.
Yes, it was. It was a deal breaker.
Never have been married, or no.
It would have, because I would never trust anyone who says I'll quit smoking. So,
good point.
So Sarah falls in love. Eddie falls in love, and we have 7 glorious days of love. Mm-hmm. And then something happens. And we can't talk about it because that's part of the story.
It's
a suspense. and you do build it up with a lot of, you know, so it's one doesn't guess, you know, what's going to happen. And the twists and the turns are interesting. And the ending is great. You know, and it's funny. There are places where you get very sad and you cry. And here's one of the places I got tears in my eyes, and this might seem funny. I got tears in my eyes where they were looking at a book about birds, and they had both read the book when they were children, and they knew the book. And I thought, how sad it is today that children, because they're not like reading in the same way that we read when we were young, that will they? It's not the same as doing it on the internet, you know?
No, it's really not. No, and I guess most kids would learn about birds on the internet now, but I have a little boy of 14 months, and I guess, because I'm an author, I'm just desperate for him to fall in love with books the way I did as a child. And it's really sweet, actually, that bit moved you to tears. I think you're the first person who said that, but I totally get it, because I think, you know, the power of connection lies so much in who we've been our entire lives rather than just who we are now. And sort of that compatibility, you know, sort of looking back at your lives before you met and realizing that at any point in your lives, actually, you were probably meant to be together.
Well,
those kind of shared interests when you're tiny.
Yeah, well, you capture the love story and then the suspense you keep going throughout with some other interesting characters and side stories. And as I said, when I read a book, I compare it to other books. I, you know, read so much. And when I got to that part, I won't tell people. I don't tell people things in advance. I never, ever read what's on Amazon when I buy a book. I mean, I just would never do that. All that stuff because I think it's awful when you. I don't even like to know when somebody's going to be killed in a story. I don't want to know it in advance. I want to get there. I want that slow reveal. That's part of the fun of reading.
Mm. And I think actually a lot of people get taken in by their, you know, heavily marketed books. I was about to say I got trashed in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't even trashed. I was just sort of dismissed. And I responded by sort of online stalking the book writer who wrote that. Just in a kind of attempt to control how sort of embarrassed and humiliated I felt. And he wrote an article the very next week about sort of, you know, the relationship between authors and critics. excuse me. And it made for a really interesting read, actually, thinking about, you know, the way books can be really heavily marketed. Because he was saying, you know, I think a literary critic's job is to warn people, what, you know, to give people a second view, because some books are so heavily marketed and they're terrible. So I think, actually, for you, you know, for readers who just ignore all of that and just want to know about the book itself and try reading a few pages, I think that's the best possible way. It's so easy to get pulled in by, you know, what you're seeing on social media or, you know, what it says on the Amazon listing. And well, reading such a subjective experience.
Exactly. It? And as you said, read a few pages. And when I got, if I wasn't going to read the whole book anyway, but when I got to that part in the very beginning where you mentioned bookends, and I won't tell again people why you mentioned bookends.
No, you mustn't.
I mustn't. And I said to myself, whoa, she sees things, she feels things, she understands people, and I need to know more about this author. I need to read the story. I need to know where she's taking these people. And just that little sentence there was so remarkable that after that I knew, boy, this is a winner.
Oh, wow. Gosh, can we work together?
Well, you know, that's...
But no, it is important, and actually so much of that profound feeling of falling in love with somebody is in the tiny details, isn't it? It's, we tend not to look at the big picture when we're falling in love, even though we're thinking about the future. But it's those intense small connections, isn't it, that really sort of fill our hearts with joy and hope and excitement.
Exactly. And now, of course, I mentioned your webpage because what I love about it is, first of all, you mentioned that you haven't taken any creative writing classes and you haven't, the things you haven't done. And I thought that was rather refreshing because I am a little bit worried because, as I said, I get about 10 to 12 books a week. I'm a fast reader. But I am getting a lot of books that I have a feeling have been put through, programs on the computer that check their spelling, their grammar, and their usage, so that they are becoming very similar, and it's that's bad. An author has to just be well read, and then go for it.
Yes, I think not reading and not talking, I think that's a problem a lot of authors have because we sit in a room on our own working. You know, I think it's important to get talking time into the day as much as it is reading time. You do end up just writing sort of samey books that, you know, become quite beige and indistinguishable from each other. I want to be careful not to just dismiss a whole load of writers. Because I really do have profound respect for anyone who finishes a book. People tell me all the time, oh, yeah, I'm writing a novel. But I've met very, very few people who've said, yes, I've written a novel. Because it takes a hell of a lot to do, I think. I don't want to just casually dismiss people, other writers. But I think writing by numbers and writing cynically with your eye right on the market and what's selling at the moment, it's just never going to make for a hugely satisfying read, is it? I think, you know, the people talk all the time about writing from your heart, but I really think that's the only way. You know, The Ghosted, for example, is a book that spans many different genres. It doesn't really fit into any particular corner of the market, but it seems to be doing okay in spite of that. And, you know, I could have really worried about that and sort of tried to steer it, you know, more closely in one direction or another, but...
You have to go with your passion. A writer has to go with their passion and just let it go. And then, of course, at the end, you need an editor to help you sometimes organize things up and maybe come out with a better title. But other than that, and I do like one of the things I was going to mention, and this is not all authors do it, but I do like that you do your acknowledgments in the beginning of the book. And you thank people.
That wasn't me, actually. That's something that Viking decided.
They did it? Okay, because I like that. It's because it's important. Mary Higgins Clark has done that always with her books. And she's always felt that she wanted to make sure that she thanked the people who read the books, you know, and who help her you know, come out with everything she needs. And so they did a great job on that. And the cover is very nice. Now, on your webpage, I liked that you mentioned a couple of important things that for writers. And I very much like the writing space one. And then tell us about Pomodoros.
Sure. So the Pomodoro technique is something about which an entire book's been written. But anyone who's interested in it can just Google it. And there's a really good website, actually, which kind of lays out the basic principles. A lot of people have heard of the Pomodoro technique, and they'll say things like, oh, yeah, it's that thing where you do 25 minutes on and 5 minutes off. Yes, it does involve that, but there's so much more. It's basically a sort of framework, a really quite strict framework within which writers or, you know, people who do any job can achieve maximum concentration and creative output. And the idea is, yes, that you spend 25 minutes writing and you must use a timer so you don't go on too far. And then you have 5 minutes off. And that 5 minute break needs to be timed as well. You know, having a longer break tends to interrupt the flow. And you do that four times before taking a longer break. And, I mean, you know, there are so many different elements to it. It's not just the timing, but that's the memorable part of it. There's just invaluable tools such as keeping a notepad and a pen right next to you so that when you're when you're in the middle of a task and you suddenly think, oh, gosh, you know, I meant to call the man back about the delivery. Normally, you'll just call that man about the delivery because you know you'll forget about it otherwise. Or often, if you're doing a bit of writing and finding really hard, it's far more appealing calling somebody about delivery than it is wrestling with your plot problem. and so having a notebook there means that you just scribble it down, and then you can deal with it at the end of your 25-minute period. There's stuff about planning how many Pomodoros you're going to do each day, having a tick box, affirmation, so many different things. I find it just transformative. It's completely changed the way I write, and it means I need to only spend half my day writing, if that, sometimes even less. And my output is still better than it used to be when I first started out, and I was just sort of hammering madly away at a computer for 8 or 10 hours a day, which left me feeling completely insane.
Well, people can see this on your website, which is rosiewalsh.com, and I love the name Rosie. I always love that name. I think it's just such a terrific name. Now, when of course we talk about reading well, and then you know once I do. Some research into writers, and I saw one of the things that you mentioned in one of the blurbs is that you like Gail Hyman's Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine, and she was on the program, and I said, whoa, yes, so wow, this is quite an amazing book.
Yes, no, it really is, and I think it came at just the right time. I think, you know, we're collectively as modern Western human beings having increasing really engaging far more in discussions about things like loneliness and mental health and you know, just sort of emotional struggle in general, and it just felt like the perfect time to write not just a book about loneliness but the book, you know, the definitive book. It has the ability to do that rare thing, which is to make you laugh out loud when you're actually reading about something incredibly harrowing. She's just a remarkable writer. Tremendous respect. I can't imagine where that book came from or how long it took to write.
It is quite an amazing book. And now, when you were young, what authors did you read?
What authors did I read? Well, my favourite author when I was a girl was a British writer called Patricia Leach, who used to write these stories about a girl living on the moorlands in the north of England, and she had a horse, and she was always galloping off into the hills. But it was partly because I was really into horses, but partly I just remember being transfixed by her descriptions of the landscape and how wild and sort of emotional the whole thing was. And it's funny, you know, I've only kind of realised very recently that that's really played into the way that I wrote Ghosted, that connection between emotion and landscape. What else did I read?
Did you read the Bagthorpe saga?
No.
Helen Cresswell?
No, I think British and American children read quite differently.
Oh, no, that's British. She's British. The Bagthorpe saga. Oh, my gosh. If you haven't
never
read that.
Heard of it.
If you haven't read. That is the very, very. After Jane Austen, who's my go-to author, it's Helen Cresswell. The Bagthorpe saga.
Like
you have to read every one of them. You will read them.
You will
love them. And when you do, I'd like you to come back on the. On Joy on Paper, and we'll talk about them, because you will go crazy. They are the well, if I had a choice between taking, well, maybe Dickens, I would take Dickens, but she would be like my third. Jane Austen, Dickens, and then Helen Cresswell. British.
Is she alive? Have you talked to her?
No, she's. Unfortunately, she's not with us anymore. But the books are amazing, and you have to get them. You absolutely have to get them.
Oh, gosh, I shall.
And I shall have you back on. I shall have you back on. I'll give you a whole hour, and we can talk about writing, and we can talk about the joy of writing. Okay.
Okay. I'm in.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being Joy on Paper today. And as I said, we'll have you back. And the book is absolutely fantastic. It's called Ghosted. And I'm sure everyone will be getting it because it's unbelievable blurbs. Fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been really great chatting.
Okay. And I'm going to have you back soon. I'm not going to wait for your next book. I'm not going to have you wait for your next book to come out because it might be too long.
No,
and
don't.
I just enjoy talking. I love talking to anybody named Rosie. So,
okay. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, I love her. Okay. Ghosted is... It's funny for people who don't know, people of a different generation might not know about this ghosted thing about people who don't respond to you, and then they even unfriend you on Facebook and all of that kind of stuff. So it's interesting, and it is a touching book and a love story, you know, one of these love stories. And we don't know if it's going to be a happy ending or a sad ending, because so often lately, the love stories I get are really sad endings. I mean, awful bad sad endings. This doesn't have an awful bad sad ending, but it is fun when I got a book recently, and I'm not reviewing it because it is so bad, and it's by somebody very famous. But I was so depressed by the end of the book, I said, forget it. Forget it. That person doesn't have any joy on her paper. So remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. So make sure that you get out there and start writing, as Rosie Walsh says, and Rosie Walsh knows. And go to her website. I really like her website. Just reading the title of her books in foreign languages will give you a laugh. Okay, and make sure also that you say something nice to somebody today. And I will start with Big Ed because, whoa, we had two people from England, and it's always a challenge to get them on Skype and stuff. So I want to thank Big Ed for that. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And everybody, there's so many exciting books coming up. It is summertime. It is time to read. Get out there and read a good book and turn off the television. Okay, bye-bye for now.